there are these two strategies, and they boil down to comparing to a geometric series and comparing to what's called a telescoping sum sometimes. It's not obvious why it's called telescoping, but there is a physical metaphor that it comes from. So it's a two-sided handout. And the strategy two is on one side, and strategy one's on the other. And the idea of the telescoping sum is that you have a bunch of differences between terms in some sequence, and the idea is that all of those differences, you can just think of collapsing them, kind of like these old school collapsing telescopes that they collapse into just one difference. And the idea is, if that one difference is small, then you've proved that something is small. Let me see. I wonder if I can find an image of one of those things. Collapsible telescopes, you can collapse them. So that's why it's called a telescoping sum. These little differences, you can just think of them as adding up to one difference. Example of these things. Here's my wonderful list. Here we go. Okay. So the first series, we're going to define it recursively. So the first term will be 1. After that, I'm going to have a rule that says, given the nth term, to get the next term, compute 5 minus that term you already had, and divide by 2, and that'll give you the next term. Okay. E.g., which means for example, because it's some Latin abbreviation. Means for example. So, for example, what if we compute the first two terms? Did I go through? I did. 5 minus 1 over 2 is 2. And then 5 minus 2 over 2, 1.5. 5 minus 1.5 over 2 is 1.75. Five minus 1.75 is whatever it is. 3.251 is that. And you can keep going, right? I believe this sequence actually converges to 5/3. Even if I didn't know what it converged to, I could prove that it converges by proving it was Cauchy. Right? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to first, let's just look at differences of consecutive terms. So this is following strategy one here. Okay. Let's just consider the size of the difference between consecutive terms. And let's look at them here, get an idea of what's going on. The difference between 1 and 2 is 2. And I don't care about the sign, because I care about the magnitude. I want to show that late terms are close together, because that's what Cauchy means. The difference is 1. 2 minus 1 is 1. And then the difference between 2 and 1.5 is 0.5. The difference between 1.5 and 1.75 is 0.25. The difference between the next two terms is 0.125. What's happening is every time the distance is getting cut in half. So it looks like we can compare the differences to a geometric series because they're shrinking by a factor of 2 each time. So that's what you're doing in strategy 1. You show that the next difference is some fraction of the previous difference. So let's see if we can prove that we really are shrinking by a half all the time. Let's just do a little algebra. Okay. So now use the definition of the sequence. It says that given a new term, it's one half of 5 minus the previous term. So apply that to these terms. So we have 5 minus 2, 5 minus what? 5 minus a sub k plus 1, and then a sub k plus 1 is 5 minus k. Let me just do a little algebra here. You can factor out the 2, and since we're subtracting, the 5s cancel. And then you can also then factor out a negative 1. Well, the absolute value of negative 1 is just 1. The absolute value of 2 is 2. So we just get a 2 down here and a positive 1 upstairs. Well, what did you look at that? That is exactly 1 half of the k difference, right? The k plus 1 difference is exactly one half of the previous difference, right? So what I saw numerically here was a clue, and then I confirmed that it's always going to be that way with a little bit of algebra. Okay. So we see what we need here. We're shrinking by a factor of half each time. Okay. So the very first difference, D0, right? The difference between term A0 and term A1 is just 1. And we're shrinking by a half each time. So in general, when you're at the k term, it will be 2 to the minus k times D0 And we already saw that D0 would be 1. So it actually comes out very simple in this case. It's exactly 2 to the minus k. I guess technically on the match. Okay, so we've shown that the differences are getting small. You may want, I like to write it with negative exponents sometimes, but you may also find it convenient to think about it as a fraction when you're comparing it to the geometric series. But that's the key idea there. If it's shrinking by a half each time, then starting from the first one, d0, we're going to shrink by k powers of a half once we get to the kth difference. So how do I actually show something's quotient now? Well, let's say I have natural numbers m greater than n. So what's the difference between them? Well, you just use the triangle inequality, right? I have that here in implicitly here. What is this? If you like, you could write this as a bunch of differences, right? Go from an to the next one, right? There's the difference from going to term n plus 1, then there's another difference from going to term n plus 2, and so on. Notice that the a's of n plus 1's cancel out, and so this really is equal. Eventually, you're going from the difference between a sub m and a sub m minus 1. And of course, this is so what you have here, then by the triangle inequality, is what I'm doing is I'm rounding up. I could, if I was careful, I could take advantage of the fact that actually the differences are alternating in sign, right? If you look at the sequence, we go up, then down, then up, then down. But I'm not going to bother with that. I'm just going to make it simple and just. Instead of trying to take advantage of the cancellation, I'll just do a roundup to treat all of them as not canceling. So even though this will really be smaller than what I'm writing here, when I round it up, it'll still be small enough, even though I'm not taking advantage of all the cancellation that's happening. Okay. I just want to prove it's Cauchy here. I'm not trying to get the optimal estimate of how fast it's Cauchy. How fast it's stabilizing, you might say. And what is this? This is exactly those differences. And I think we actually computed all of those differences exactly. Using 3 here. You verify that the differences are just these powers of 1 half. So I have 2 terms in the sequence, but n and m could be integers very far apart. So I just have to think about the distance between them as the sum of distances between many consecutive terms. and I round up to the situation where there's no canceling. And I use a geometric series formula. Tricky with these Cauchy proofs because you're dealing with, I think there's two different times, late time n and even later time m. But when I round up to something like this, I have a nice situation here where I can do one more round up. This negative 1/2 to the m, since m is even bigger than n, this power of a half is even smaller, right, than this nth power. So there's no worry here about this being a negative number or anything. The numerator is positive, and likewise the denominator, 1 minus a half, also positive. So I'm just going to round up this m power to 0. And that's what you end up doing in these two strategies, is the dependence on the later time n, you eventually round that up to a constant. In this case, the term that depends on m, we round up to the 0. So there isn't, so there. Maybe I should just do that. Okay, so I round that up to 0, and if you like, you can simplify it. You can do it, right? There's a half in the numerator, in the denominator, so you could write it as. I'm just going to focus on it like this. Think of it as 2 times 1/2 to the nth power. The point is that that term goes to 0.
That we've shown that if you have two late terms in the sequence, how far apart can they be? Well, they're going to be less than 2 times an nth power of a half. Okay. And that n is the earlier of the two times that we're looking at. So if both times are late, then since big powers of a half are small, then we've got this nice estimate here that says that the difference between any two late terms is small. How do we actually finish the proof? Okay. Well, here's how we can finish the proof. Okay. Bring in our friend the epsilon, right? And what do we need to do? We know that powers of a number smaller than 1 go to 0, right? When you take larger and larger powers. And multiplying that by a constant 2, well, if you think of a constant sequence of 2s, they tend to 2, right? So you can just use a limit law. Normally, I would just skip this step, but in any case, to be extra clear here, this term, this 2 times the 1/2 power of the n that we got over there, it does go to 0. Right? We proved how nth powers behave on earlier class day. If you have a power of a number bigger than 1, big powers make it big. Power of a number smaller than 1, big powers make it small. Okay, I haven't brought the epsilon yet, but now, okay, by 5 and 6, there is an n. Well, we know that for n large, this thing is small, right? So in particular, given epsilon, we can get it smaller than epsilon. Okay, so now what? Well, now by 7, if we have 2 numbers now, so an m and an n, and they're both late times, so in the sense that lowercase n is late enough that my 2 times a big power of a half, the nth power of a half, is small, smaller than epsilon, and then m is an even later time, I guess I'm not just using 7, am I? Then I'm going to use my estimate here, comparing the a's of n and the a's of m. So I guess I'm also using 4. Okay. So by 4 and 7, I have that the difference between these 2 late terms is small. Right? It's less than 2 to the 1/2, 2 times the nth power of a half, which in turn is less than epsilon. So I've shown that you give me an epsilon, well then I just need to pick some cutoff point at which my powers of a half are less than epsilon, even after I'm multiplying by 2 once at the end. And then that means that all late terms in the sequence must be epsilon close together, because their difference is how big? It can't be that big, because it comes from a tail segment, a very late piece of the geometric series, where these are all really tiny numbers, because they're big powers of a half. And even the starting power is tiny, and then the others are even tinier, and the geometric series, when they add up, they're still tiny. Right? So everything is tiny. And that's the proof, right? Because that's what you need to show something is Cauchy. You need to show that for any 2 late terms, they're epsilon, the terms in the sequence are epsilon close. Okay, so questions or comments about this? Yes?
In number 4?
Yes.
When you wrote the tree, how do you simplify everything? Visible tree.
Okay, so here I'm using 3, right? Mm-hmm. So you're asking how I get from here to here.
Yeah.
That's a geometric series formula. I put it on the handout on Monday. It's a general fact.
Okay.
You're probably familiar with this. Yes? Okay. Let me write it another way. Okay. Now, make it a little more interesting. You may have been told about how to factor a difference of cubes. Oh, this is less commonly taught. This is true. Like distribute, and a bunch of stuff cancels. X squared times x is your x cubed. XY times x is x squared y, right? But then there's also an x squared times a negative y that cancels with that. Y squared times x, okay, that's xy squared. But then we have xy times negative y, which gives us a negative xy squared. They cancel. And then there's finally a negative y cubed from y squared to negative y. The only stuff that doesn't cancel is on the left side, x cubed minus y cubed. And if I make x1 and y r, then I've got this. Now, in general, we have this. Some algebra. You take this sequence of increasing powers of r, and then you multiply it by 1 minus r, and everything cancels except an r to the n and an r to the m. Okay? So now divide both sides by 1 minus r. Clever algebra. That's just the geometric series stated in a general form where the starting power isn't 1, but the starting power is r to the n. The idea here is, we're rounding stuff up because I want to show that this distance is small. So I keep rounding it up until I get something really simple like this. And as long as I manage to keep it small, right, like 1/2 power to the n is small, as long as I keep it small, then that's a good way of rounding up, right? Round up something complicated and small to something simple and small. And then we showed that the distances were small. Yeah. Yeah, whenever you're doing these Cauchy things, you want to show that late terms are close, so you have to round up the distance between late terms to something that you understand, but something that's still small. Other questions? Let's look at one where we use a... Do we use strategy 2 again? Let's do one more on strategy 1. And this time I'll make it a little more interesting. I'm going to put the... over here. One's a little more interesting. I'm good. Let's say I start out with a half, okay? And now the recursive rule is I take 1/2 minus the square of what I had before. This one actually does converge, although it may not be so obvious, and it's not a general fact that if you do this kind of thing, it always converges, right? I mean, if you just plug in some random quadratic polynomial here and apply it over and over again, you're not going to get something convergent in general. But this one happens to converge. Let me see here. I'll show you a little table of numbers on it. It's kind of interesting. You can do it on your calculator, too. You can do something like enter in a half, hit enter, and then you type in something like 1/2 minus answer, or whatever your calculator's term for previous answer is, squared, and then you hit enter, and then you hit enter again and again and again, and it's a fast way to repeatedly apply something like that. I can show you the same thing on a spreadsheet. I don't think you'll be able to see my calculator well under a document cam or something like that, but let me see here. Okay, let me see if I can. Okay, starts at a half, then I take a half minus a half squared, which is a half minus a fourth, which is a fourth, and then I keep repeatedly applying this, and make this bigger. Too big. There we go. So what happens? Well, it actually is, it's like the previous one, it's bobbing up and down, right? It increases and it decreases and it increases, keeps going back and forth, but the oscillations get smaller. It does look like it's converging to something. Let's go out past the 100th term of the sequence. Okay? You can see as you go down that more and more decimal places stabilize. Now I'm at the point where Excel's not even showing me enough decimal places to tell the difference. I can tell it to show me more decimal places. Okay, most of those decimal places are lies. It's not all zeros after that, but anyways. How about 20 decimal places? Okay. I think about maybe the first 15 decimal places are actually real, not nonsense. Okay, so after about what this would be the 114th row, and since I started at 0, I think this would be the 113th term of the sequence. Excel can't tell the difference between that and the 112th term of the sequence. Right? As we go back, we see more and more of the decimal places starting to vary, right? The sequence has bigger oscillations earlier. When we get to the beginning, even the first decimal place is changing. Right? But as we scroll down, we start to see more and more constancy. Oh, it's converging to something. If you set both of these terms equal to an unknown x and you solve for x, you can figure out what this number is. It's something involving a square root. Right? To solve a quadratic equation. We could prove, without knowing that number, we could still prove it converges just by proving it's Cauchy. And the way we do it is, again, compare to a geometric series. First term is a fourth, and when I was looking at this, I wanted to get some kind of handle on the difference between terms. Okay. So the literature training. Trying to prove his cup sheet. Okay, one, we could look at the size of the differences, right? So, probably grammatically I should say something like let, right? I'm introducing a new term, I need to define it. Let D sub K be the size of the kth difference of terms. And now, how do we connect this with the formula there? A little more room, so I'm just going to jump over here. So look at the k plus 1th difference. Plug in the recursive formula there. Will cancel, but then I'm left with a sub k squared minus a sub k plus 1 squared. So it's not as simple as last time. The difference of the k plus 1 difference is not a simple thing here. We can factor this out, right? We can factor out using the difference of squares formula. Okay. So, but look at this. This, remember, we're taking an absolute value, so the sign doesn't matter. Right? If you flip the order of the subtraction, you flip the sign, but you don't change the magnitude. So this first factor here, this difference, since we're just taking its magnitude, it's just the distance between a sub k and a sub k plus 1. And that's how I define this kth difference here, or kth distance. So we're ignoring the sign. Okay. So, the kth plus 1 distance between consecutive terms is kth distance times some number here. Now, what I'd like to do is round this up to a constant so that I could show that it's shrinking by some factor. Maybe shrinking by a half like before, huh? So how are we going to do that, though? We have to get some kind of estimates here. Okay. Now, having a few numbers in the sequence may help us. Right. So, look at this. You see that we had started out a half, then went to a fourth, then we went up to something that's, look, it's between a half and a fourth. Right? And then all of these are also between 0.25 and 0.5. They're all between a fourth, which is 0.25, and a half, which is 0.5. So maybe we could prove that. Okay. And that would be really good if we could. If everything is stuck between a fourth and a half in our sequence, then what is the magnitude of this thing? Well, it's something it's going to be well,
I was going to say I'd round these both up, round up one to a half and one to a fourth, but that's not quite right. I'd have to round them both up to a half. That's not going to work. More careful here. Maybe I can do a little better. I need to be a little bit smaller, don't I? Okay. Let me see what's this term here, the third term? A1 was a fourth. The third term, what would happen if we plug in the formula? A half minus a fourth squared. So a half minus a 16th. 8 16ths minus 1 16th is 7 16ths. Okay, that'll be just enough for me to make a proof work. Okay? See, right here, I have this difference, take difference times some unknown thing that depends on what time it is, where I am in the sequence, equals the next distance of difference, magnitude. So if I could show that both of these are at most, say, 7 16ths, then the size of them added together is at most 14 16ths. So, which is 7/8. So if I could prove this, that the terms forever are stuck between a fourth and 7/16, maybe not for all n, but for all n greater than or equal to 1, right? Except for that first term, right? The one that's a half. If I could show that they're all stuck between a fourth and 7/16, then I would know that my distances are shrinking by a factor of 7/8, and hence I could round it to a geometric series, like I did before. But instead of a half, it'll be a 7/8. But I have to work a little harder for this one. Let's see if we can do that proof. Okay. There's nothing new in the base case, right? A1 is a fourth, so yes, it's between a fourth and 7/16. Inductive step. All right. Now assume I have some n greater than or equal to 1, and it's between a fourth and 7/16. Now we need to prove that the next term is also within those bounds. So what should we call this? This is 4.1, 4.2. Okay, so I make the
assumption. And then for 4.3, let's look at let's apply the recursion. I think let's just apply it one step at a time. So first, square it. Okay. So everything is positive. So if I square everything, I'll preserve the ordering. Right? When you have positive numbers, bigger numbers have bigger squares. Or I should say greater numbers have greater squares. Okay. 1/16 less than or equal to a sub n squared, less than or equal to 49 over 256. Okay. Well, don't lose hope yet. Okay. Now, multiply by negative 1. Okay. So all the inequalities get flipped. Okay. Or how about we write it with the order reversed? So you multiply by negative 1, reverse the order. And then add the 1 half. So I squared, I took the opposite, which changed the ordering of the numbers. Then I add a half, and this looks good. 1/2 minus a 16th, right? We looked at that before. That's 8/16 minus 1/16. That's 7/16. Okay, so the upper bound will get propagated from a sub n to a sub n plus 1, right? 1/2 minus the square of a sub n is a sub n plus 1 by definition. Okay, so we got the 7/16 upper bound. What about the 1/4? Well, I guess we just need to figure out how big this thing is. okay. So this is a big power of 2, actually. It's 2 to the 8th, the denominator 256. So you multiply 2 by 7 powers of 2, you'll get 256. And so that's 128 over 256 if you make the first fraction here, the half, a multiple of 1 over 256. So 128 minus 49.
79?
Okay. Okay. All right. Now, what's 256 divided by 4? Okay, that's 64. So our lower bound is preserved. 1/4 is 64 over 256. Which, of course, is less than 79 over 256, which we've shown is less than or equal to a sub n plus 1, which we've shown is less than or equal to 7/16, okay? So the upper bound will be preserved when we go to the next term, and the lower bound will also be preserved. It's a little tricky here. I mean, the naive approach would have just been, okay, inductively assume the 7/16 is an upper bound, and then prove it. But if you had tried that, you would have gotten stuck, because when you took the minuses, right, then your nice upper bound of 7/16 got flipped to a lower bound. Because of the minus in there, I had to actually do an inductive proof that had also a lower bound in it. And then that lower bound, when I applied the minus sign, got flipped around to an upper bound. So I had to be a little clever here. I had to prove a little bit more than I needed. Okay.
So that verifies the inductive proof there. So we have these bounds. So now we know it's Cauchy because we've shown that the differences shrink by a factor of 7/8, or at least by a factor that's no bigger than 7/8, right? Okay.
Okay. So, let's see if I got a picture of that. Yes, I did.
Okay. Will I have time for all 7 of my examples? Of course not.
We'll get 3 examples in today. Then we'll move on. I can put the other examples on paper and show you if I think they're important enough. Okay. So,
So 4 was this nice inductive proof of our bound 3.
Right? Okay.
And okay. So by 3, or by, I guess if you want, by, I don't know if I should say 4 proofs 3. We should really say the hypothesis of 3, right? If these bounds work, right? And technically 3 is just true because it's an if then. But what I want to say is the hypothesis of 3 is true. Right? So the important thing is therefore the conclusion is true. Right? So by 3 and 5, we have this 7/8 factor, okay? So you repeatedly apply that. So the kth difference is at most 7/8 to the power k times the very first difference. Right? Because we know that each time the distance between the consecutive terms is at most 7/8 the size of the previous distance. So after k times, it's at most 7/8 to the k times the very first distance. Which was what? It was from a half to a fourth. Okay. And that distance is a fourth. Now the 7/8 goes to 0, times it by a 4, it still goes to 0. So I will skip the step where I use the limit laws to multiply the 7/8 to the k by a constant sequence of fourths. Right? Okay. So, okay, I need the epsilon now. Let epsilon be positive. Since 7/8 to the, say, n times the fourth goes to 0. There is some number n such that if you have n greater than or equal to n, then you get 7/8 to the n times the fourth less than epsilon. Right? Lowercase n greater than this capital N, which is our wait time. Do the 100th power of 7/8 on your calculator. It'll be small, trust me. As long as you're taking a power of something smaller than 1, it's going to go to 0. All right. And now we need to argue like we did before. Okay. So if M and N
are really late terms, really late times, right? M is later than N, which is at least this capital N, where my big power of 7/8 times a fourth is less than epsilon. Then the difference, the magnitude of the difference, so the distance between the nth term and the nth term is how big? Well, like we argued before, it's at most the sum of the distances between all the consecutive terms. So, and how big is that? Well, we round those up to those powers, right? Okay, so round those up to powers. There's the next line here. So here's where I use estimate 6, right? The kth distance between consecutive terms is 4th times the kth power of 7/8. These distances between consecutive terms are going to be at most what? 7/8 to the n plus 7/8 to the n plus 1 plus 7/8 to the n plus 2 all the way to 7/8 to the m minus 1, and then I can factor out that 1/4. I think, what have I done here? I think I may have jumped the gun a little bit with step 8 here, but anyways, let me show you. Okay, geometric series time. This is 7/8 to the n minus 7/8 to the m over 1 minus 7/8 all times a fourth, which we round up. Okay, so what do you have? You actually have an 8 down here, 1 minus 7/8. So you're dividing by an 8th, which is multiplying by 8. You're multiplying by a 4th. Round up the m power to 0. Okay. So it simplifies drastically. But where I goofed was in step 8, I used a 1/4, and I should have used a 2 because the factor you actually get here is a 2. So what I actually need is a 2 there. Okay. But a constant multiple of 2 is not going to be any different than a constant multiple of 4. So I probably should have done all of step 9 except the less than epsilon part, and then I should have done step 8 where I argued, okay, it's powers of something smaller than 1, so it's going to 0, right? So it's going to be small when n is large. Anyways. But I guess the way I've written it, somehow I had some clairvoyance and I knew I would need a 2 there. But it comes from simplifying this thing. Okay, this is a little annotation. Rounding the nth power of 7/8, the negative of it, that's getting rounded up to 0 here. That's why the m term is disappearing. It's just like in the first example. And that denominator, as I said, is 1/8, which cancels partially with the 1/4, which is where the 2 comes from ultimately. Okay. So I've actually proved that my series converges because I proved it's Cauchy. But because I made the definition of the sequence, I proved my sequence converges by proving it's Cauchy. And because the sequence was defined in a trickier way, using a quadratic recursion instead of a linear recursion, yeah, I had to be a little more clever to actually get my nice little 7/8 factor here, right? And do all this careful stuff. And actually what I wrote on my notes was wrong. I was planning to prove a bound between a 1/4 and 1/2, but fortunately I realized on the spot on the board there that wouldn't work. But I had a hunch that I could just prove it was bounded between the next two terms. And my hunch was right. Okay, so what do we need to do for this? Not this way, I'm only going to do 2 examples. Okay. I want to show you a telescoping someone if I can squeeze it into the last 60 minutes. The simplest one I know, which is when you add up the reciprocals of squares. That's the simplest one I know. I want to show you some of this. The other ones are pretty similar. The things I had in mind were stuff like, reciprocals of cubes and maybe you make the numerators alternate in sign and stuff like that. Do you have any questions about this proof? Yes. Because it's a(k) + a(k+1). So these are 2 consecutive terms in the sequence. And if I want to round them up to something, I have to round them both up, right? So I showed that everything in the sequence, except the first term, was at most 7/16. Other questions? Okay. Telescoping sum. Okay, so this one is not recursion. This is really a series because the sequence is defined by adding up a bunch of terms. what's the difference between two consecutive terms? Well, in the nth term, you do everything up to the reciprocal of n squared. You do the n plus 1 term, you'll do one more reciprocal square, which is n plus 1 squared reciprocal. Okay? And here's my idea. I want to compare it to this. Basically, I'm inspired by, perhaps you remember, the integral test from Calculus 2 for proving a series converges. The idea is the antiderivative of 1 over x squared is negative 1 over x. That's kind of where I'm getting this from. But I can do it without an integral. I can just look directly at it with the algebra. Let's do the comparison. 1 over n minus 1 over n plus 1. Okay, we need to make these common fractions, right? Or common denominators needed. Okay, stuff cancels in the numerators. Okay, now I have n and n plus 1 factors in the denominator. Now, I'm going to round down by rounding that n up to an n plus 1, which will round the fraction down. So the comparison worked well. I've shown that the difference between consecutive terms is actually positive, so I don't even need the absolute value of ours. I've shown that it's less than the difference between consecutive reciprocals. Now, I know the reciprocals go to zero, so here's the trick. Here's where a bunch of stuff cancels. If m is greater than n, then what? What if we look at am minus an? So this is a difference between two terms, well, they could be very far apart in time. So we have to think of it as, okay, first you go from an to an plus 1, then you go to an plus 2, right? So add that change. Then you go to an plus 3, add that change. Eventually you're going from am minus 1 to an, right? So you write it as a whole bunch of differences. Stuff cancels. Now, round these all up. They round up to, I'm just going to take off those absolute value bars. Everything, they're positive, so they don't do anything. Okay, so it's 1 over n minus 1 over n plus 1 plus 1 over n plus 1 minus 1 over n plus 2 all the way to 1 over m minus 1 over m 1 over m minus 1 minus 1 over m, right? Just by using the comparison I made in 2. Now, a whole bunch of stuff cancels in here, like the 1 over n plus 1s, for example, and the 1 over n plus 2s. Everything except the first and last term cancel. That's why it's called a telescoping sum. You're adding up a bunch of differences, and everything cancels except the very stuff at the end. And this is 1 over n minus 1 over m, which is less than 1 over n. So just like with the geometric series, the part that depended on the later time m, we rounded up to a constant. Right? We rounded up to a zero in this case, right? Because it's a negative 1 over m. We're just left with 1 over n. Ah, but this goes to zero as n goes to infinity. So that's how you know it's Cauchy. Because if you choose an n large, and then another m even later than that n, then the difference between the terms is less than 1 over n. So 1 over n is small when n is large. So when n is large, you take the a sub n term and an even later term, and the distance between them is small. So that's how you know it's Cauchy. I skipped the very last part because I'm out of time. But it's the same thing here, right? We show that something goes to zero, and that something is bigger than the distances between late terms. So for any epsilon, you wait long enough, late terms are less than epsilon apart. Maybe I'll write some others of the examples on paper and put them on the website. We've got to quit now.